Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Dance House Theatre Manchester. Please welcome a man who has just eaten his first Indian Scotch egg. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello, Manchester. Oh, yeah. It's great to be here. How lovely. Thanks so much. Loads of people here. It's incredible. It's really difficult to have people come to London. They're cunts, aren't they, in London? Hey, hey, yeah. I don't even live there anymore, so I can say that. So, welcome to the show. It's called Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast, except at the Dance House Theatre in Manchester. But I was... I was playing a beer pong tourney at Crazy Pedro's Pizza Parlor. And I was talking to Crazy Pedro. He calls it Rahelastaba Etdemtama. Yeah, that's some cool kids in. Some cool kids in. Good. I haven't really thought of anything. I was on the way up on the train and... I've never seen this before. Scotch eggs, but made with an onion bargee around the outside. Is that a Manchester delicacy, or is that a London delicacy? I've never seen the like. It was horrible. It was horrible, but not as bad as a Scotch egg. A Scotch egg. Some of you may know this. I live in the countryside now, and I've got a new hobby, which I didn't mention in the first podcast that's just gone out, which is I'd walk my dog around a field every day. It's a very stony field. And I've been trying to clear... It takes 25 minutes to walk around the field. It's a massive field. And it's every square meter probably has 1,000 stones on it. And they also go deep down into the earth. I've been trying to clear every stone off the field. I figure I'm going to walk around there 700 times a year for the remainder of my life, which hopefully be 30 or 40 years. I could clear it. And then I'm trying to throw all the stones to the side and make a wall around the edge of the field that can be seen from space. At least my life will have some meaning. That's what I'm trying to do. But I'm quite embarrassed about it, so I've been trying to hide this fact from the villagers. But today a man caught me doing it. He wasn't a farmer, luckily. He was a man. He said, "Oi, hey!" That's when I came up, because I was right in the middle of the field. I'd gone to get some big ones from the...
So I've got, and I came back. He said, "You collecting stones?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, yeah." He said, "Yeah, I used to do that." He was a very old, decrepit man. He said, "I did that. There was a cairn there already." And he said, "I created that." So kind of weird that I met this future version of myself. His cairn was rubbish. It had about 30 stones in it. I've added about 500 stones to that already in just 2 weeks. He's going to hate me. It's like nearly a wall in that corner of the field. It's going pretty well. So, my new emergency questions book is out. This is in the proper shops this week. So, and I will be selling it after the show in the foyer. If I can take cards or cash. If you pay by card, you get 1p off. because I haven't got any 1p pieces. So this, if you've already got the emergency questions books we put out ourselves, these have got some of the classic questions in there, but there's 800 questions that have never been in book form before, and there's 1,001 altogether. Questions like, I haven't even read what this is going to be. I can't remember. It's 728 if you're following at home. If the technology became available, would you consider having your rib cage and the skin on your torso replaced with a Perspex mold of the exact same dimensions so you could see into your body? Would you do it if the technology became available? Come on, mate, that would be exciting, wouldn't it? You've already found out what your skull looks like, haven't you? That's it could be exciting for you. So I hope you buy these because I bought a big suitcase. They're hardback and they're really heavy, and I bought a suitcase of them up on the train. I don't want to go back with any of them, so please. There's not enough for one each, so I'll be asking some of those questions to my guests. And so, look, this was incredible. This show sold out before we'd even announced any guests, so we realised we could get any old rubbish on. So it's... we're going to get someone famous on me, fuck it. My guest this week... Yeah, wait, because don't tell them they're doing too... is probably best known for playing the character Alfonso Decker in Holby City. That's the, when you say Holby City, that's the character in it that most of us mainly remember. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Toby Haddock! He's from Manchester. Well, he isn't, but he lives here. Welcome, come in. Pick up a mic if you like. I find it easier to take it off the stand. How are you doing?
I thought you were going to say episode 3,125 of Holby City. Because it was an episode of
one
Holby
episode.
City.
One episode. What did Alfonso Decker... For people who don't remember...
Yeah, well, Alfonso it was Decker. A Christmas episode.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't do it in May. he was a science fiction fan who was in hospital. So it was a real stretch. He was a rather ill science fiction fan, that couldn't happen. I really had to work hard at that audition, yes.
Yes.
In fact, the reason I got the part, I think, was because at the audition, one of the lines was, I want to watch the Matrix. He's in hospital, he wants to watch the Matrix on DVD. Yeah. And he says, "I'm a real fan, I've watched it 18 times. And I said, "I think the person that written this doesn't understand quite how many times science fiction fans watch them that they like." So I said it would be better if they said 118 times, yeah. And that they did in the final programme.
Wow.
So I suspect they had to give me the part, otherwise I'd have got a writer's credit.
I've got my new book is, I don't know if you like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Do you know the Star Wars? They should put Doctor Who in Star Wars, shouldn't that be good? how he gets on with old, you know, that bloke, the bloke with the helmet on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of really like Star Wars.
It's not my, yeah.
I bought that because I don't like it, so I bought the character that's evil, so that shows
right,
George...
to show that you hate it.
So yeah. George Lucas, take that, George Lucas. 15 quid that cost me to prove that. So, you are very well known for your association with Doctor Who, which, you know, many people think is a nerd/child's programme. But they are... Those people are very, very wrong. It's very cool now, isn't it?
Well, it's cool now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've lost count of the amount of comedians who are now on television saying how much they love Doctor Who, because I've been in dressing rooms with most of them, and I never held back. But I remember when Peter Capaldi was announced, I think, and Shappy Corsandi was there going, "Oh yes, I think he'll be a marvellous Doctor," because I was going, "You've never discussed Creature from the Pit with me in the 99 Club Leicester Square Green Room," So yes, it was the love that dared not speak its name.
Yeah.
But now nobody will shut up about it.
And you were there in the early days.
Yes.
Well, you weren't there in the early days, presumably. I don't know if you may be a Time Lord yourself, but I did
play racist barman in the film about the early days of Doctor
Who. Oh, that's
true.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm a racist. That was easy as well. They just went, who do we know that's convincingly racist? Toby, yeah, he'll do.
I think this racist would actually use this word. So
I hate 118 different nationalities.
Who was your first doctor that you when you were a kid that you got?
Tom Baker.
It was Tom Baker.
Yeah, I know time hasn't been kind, but I'm 44.
Well, I thought it might be later than that. I remember Pertwee.
Yeah,
I vaguely feel like I remember what's his
Patrick
face?
Troughton.
Patrick Troughton.
I was born between episodes 3 and 4 of The Time Warrior, which is John Pertwee's last season, so I only remember. Yeah, of course I know that. So my earliest, yeah, Tom Baker is my
he's the best one, right?
He's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think your childhood doctor is your favourite one.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching a bit about, maybe you tweeted about something or someone. I was watching John Pertwee on GMTV today. Did you see that clip?
No.
There was John Pertwee and Barbara Windsor discussing, they were really discussing Wurzel Gummidge, but obviously I think Doctor Who might have come up. But like them in sort of her with very massive perm. And him wearing this sort of almost safari suit.
With a massive...
His
hair did get quite luscious.
Yeah. He was basically just doing Wurzel Gummidge impressions all the way through. But it was great.
If you can do it, do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, he can do it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because he was Wurzel Gummidge.
Yeah.
It's not even an impression for him.
I've done a podcast where I've interviewed lots of people who've passed through Doctor Who as opposed to maybe, and one of them was Geoffrey Baildon, who was the Crow Man from Wurzel Gummidge,
yes.
And it was towards the end of his life, and I'd sort of got the contact in a fairly circuitous route. And anyway, this chap who was Geoffrey Baildon's carer called me and said, now, Geoffrey said he'll talk to you, but you have to explain what it is you want. And basically, I do this podcast about Doctor Who. It's not really about Doctor Who. It's about their whole career. But the jumping off point is Doctor Who. So he said, and Geoffrey's a bit deaf, so he's going to pick up the other phone, so you have to speak up. So I went, hello. And I went, yes, Mr. Baildon, don't shout. So I said, well, look, I don't know if Craig's told you, but I want to do this this interview with you, and you probably don't remember much about being a Doctor Who, and we'll just start with Doctor Who, but then I want to talk about, you know, anything that you want to talk about. And he went, cock. And I just got out of the shower, so I didn't have any clothes on, and I felt very vulnerable. And I said, if you want, and he said, you sound lovely, come on Thursday. So I did.
Was he Cat Weasel?
He was Cat Weasel, yeah, as well. Right, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It was a tricky interview that, because as I say, it was towards the end of his life. But he did have moments of luster at one point. I cut it out at one point because we were talking. He said, "Yes, and I remember doing the theatre and then he just went, "Are you hairy?" And Craig had to go, "No, Geoffrey, he's not one of us." And, "Oh, never mind."
Got to keep trying. That's why I've got to keep trying.
Well, I'm not sure what he would have done if I'd said yes.
Imagine being that desperate, though, Toby, that they'd want to see your penis.
Do you know what? It's a dilemma, though, because my childhood was largely sort of a lonely one, where I dreamed of being, you know, in the company of actors, and, you know, yeah. All I've wanted to do is have an anecdote about working with Richard Todd in Dial M for Murder at the Isle of Wight. And so part of me would have gone, well, if Geoffrey Baildon has made a pass at me, and in a way, it's my childhood self would be terribly flattered.
Give him a little go. Come on, it's all the pleasure he's given you. Yeah. Just give him a little fiddle. Show him your cat weasel. That's all you have to do.
Well, I remember being jealous of my uncle because he was once in a lift with Tom Baker. So yes. A compromising position with Geoffrey Baildon trumps that, I think.
It does. Well, Tom Baker, we had Tom Baker on our first radio show, Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World.
Yeah.
He played Lionel Nimrod, this sort of Arthur C. Clarke figure. But we didn't really meet him until the very last episode when Lionel Nimrod was going to sort of deus ex machina and save the day and came into the studio. He was quite a character.
He's uttered my favourite sentence ever. I was doing a thing with him, and they were talking about an actor that's now no longer with us. And they were saying how this actor, they said this other actor said to Tom, he said, "Oh, I worked with him," and he said, "We were staying up late in a hotel," and I said, "I'm going to bed," and this actor said, "No, I'm going to stay. I'm going to sleep with that waitress," and he said, "And you know, she was a bit, you know, she was a bit." She was not the best specimen. And actors could talk like that in those days. I know they weren't. And Tom said, "Oh, that's how he liked them. The uglier, the better. He didn't have time to woo."
I may remember him just saying, "Nicholas Parsons, what a cunt." In the green room of the Paris studios. And our rather austere and quite serious and feminist producer, Sarah Smith, kind of walked into the room and he went, "Look at her walking in here with her tits sticking out." And she just had to pretend she hadn't heard. It was different times. Not the worst thing that happened in show business. They were pretty bad. It's great that you're getting to... So you're finding all these actors and getting their stories, and really at the end of their lives for a lot of them, because obviously a lot of them are from working in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I mean, that's not how I plug it to them. No. You know, I don't go...
It's your last chance.
Would you do make my podcast very soon? Yeah, I was set a challenge. I was only supposed to do it in 2013 because that was Doctor Who's 50th birthday, and a guy on Twitter said I would like to, because I've made a habit of, I found what happened to a couple of writers that nobody knew about and stuff like that, because well, you know, when you don't learn to disco dance, you have to learn to do something. and so I did, and that goes, and Doctor Who's 50th anniversary also coincided with a year that I was getting divorced, and I needed something to stop me from crying. So I thought, well, I need to meet the man who played Insurgent in episode one of The Dalek Invasion of Earth, and get to the bottom of why he doesn't receive an on-screen credit, even though it's a speaking part. It's the sort of thing that keeps me awake at night, which is probably why I was getting divorced. And so I did that for a year, and I had all sorts. So I had very obscure people, like, yeah, you know, a boom operator from the Space Pirates, and also people like Zoe Wanamaker and Kevin McNally, because I didn't have any resources apart from people sort of saying to me, "Oh, I think my mum knows so and so," and did it like that. I had no backing at all. I just did it, and the way I lured them was to say, "We don't get any money, but if you name a charity, so it's a free podcast, but the people hopefully pay to a charity nominated by the person." So that's how I did it, and I did it for that year. And the task was to get a first hand anecdote from every single Doctor Who story, but not from, you know, Fraser Hines or Louise Jameson or somebody that had been in loads, yeah, but from the man who played Insurgent in episode one of The Dalek Invasion of Earth. And I did that, and I'd sort of so enjoyed doing it. And I missed Linda Bellingham because she got poorly that year. And then she got back in touch and said, "Oh, is it too late?" And I thought, well, it doesn't have to be. And so I then just carried it on, and yeah, I've carried it on. I've had a bit of a break this year, but I'm putting together the last season now just to get them all out of the way, because I've done 250.
Right.
I don't want to die.
Well, this could be your one. I'll do your one.
Yeah, this is
just in case you go for the future. What's the closest to someone dying that you've interviewed them?
Well, I mean, I tend to make sure I've got an alibi. I did actually have somebody. There was an actor that I thought I'd never get an interview with because I knew he was quite poorly. But actually, the man who played Insurgent in episode one of The Dalek Invasion of Earth was in the same sort of actor's retirement home as him. It wasn't an actor's retirement home, but there were quite a few actors there. And I said, "Oh, is Christopher Burgess there?" And he said, "Oh yes, I go and visit Christopher in the ward. He's, you know." So I said, "Well, I didn't suppose you could ask him if he'd do it." And to my surprise, he said yes. But it was the summer holidays, and I was with my kids. And I said, "Oh, brilliant! I'll get back in touch in a couple of weeks." And in that couple of weeks, he died.
You can't give him a couple of weeks.
I know. I should. That's when I learnt. Just say yes immediately. And
I'm coming around.
Say to my children, "I'm afraid the summer holidays are off." Because the man who played Professor Phillips in Terror of the Autons needs to speak to me.
But seriously, though, this sounds like a little bit. But you ending up writing a lot of, you write obituaries for a lot of these actors in the Guardian, which, and they're really lovely because you're such a fan, I think, of these people. You get these really amazing obituaries, I think, well, into no, I mean, sort of 600
of, yeah,
words
none
or so.
None of these things are things I'm supposed to... These are all sort of... Everything I've done has largely been by accident, so I don't consider myself an obituarist. But yeah. When the man who founded the BBC Visual Effects Department died, I rang up The Guardian and said, are you going to do an obituary for him? And they went, who is he? And I said, and they went, oh, do you want to do it? And I went, oh, all right. And that was about 15 years ago. And now they sort of ask me to do various... But basically, if you were on television in the 1970s, particularly in a silver hat, the chances are I'll be your... Because you have to sort of pitch people as well. You have to sort of say, you know... Because they can't do obituaries for everybody, so you have to sort of go in and say the things that you think that Guardian readers might like about that person.
Well, and sometimes you're the lady from Space 1999 who died recently.
Yeah, Xenia Merton.
Yeah. I didn't know she died until I saw your obituary. For
well,
it,
so I am a bit of a harbinger of doom. Because I'll tell you what, I used to like it. I've tried to do stand-up about it, and it's not where I used to... I remember when they were repeated... It Ain't Our Fault, Mum, once in the afternoon. And at the end, there was a little picture of whatever he's called, Pakawala Ramani or whatever, and it said, the actor Dino Shafiq sadly died in hospital yesterday afternoon. And I went, oh. And that sort of stuck with me. And so now my Twitter feed and my... I don't put jokes much or on Twitter or Facebook anymore because, frankly, I get into arguments with people. but if somebody from the Anedin line dies, I'm there. And there's a comedian called Sally Ann Hayward who rang our mutual friend Sarah Millican and said, yes. Is Toby all right? Because he keeps putting up that people have died. and Sarah went, well, you know, he sort of writes obituaries for actors. She said, oh, thank God. I had no idea. I just thought he was in a really bad place. Oh no, another mutoid's gone to the great the great harem in the sky.
And the Jacqueline Pierce one you did, who was Serverland in Blake 7. Blake 7 was awesome. And she sounds like an amazing character.
Yeah, I did actually work with her. I did a big finish with her, but I don't think she noticed.
Right.
Because she sort of floated in and floated out again. But she was a fascinating woman.
Is there stuff for her, for example, that you couldn't get into 600 words? There must have been some stories about her. I mean, I heard like...
Well, yes, and in fact, I actually had a little... I didn't have a spat, but I had a little disagreement with The Guardian because I had put... Because she quite right... Because she played this sort of space dominatrix with sort of short hair, and she's taking over the universe in a ball gown, basically. Yes. But she was very sensual, and she was very... And she would do interviews where she'd say, and it was marvellous because I now get letters from 40-year-old men saying the first time they masturbated, they were thinking about me. and I thought, that's a great thing. And she was overjoyed by this. this wasn't something she was shy about. You know, so I put in the obituary something like, you know, and she was delighted when she got letters from grown men saying that she was the cause of their sexual awakening. And they changed it to something like... first something really anodyne, and right. I went, no, it was sex, it wasn't you know, awareness of hormones. And they went, yeah, well, we just thought we needed to tone it down a little bit.
You can't mention people wanking in no, it's the wrong...
They did give me something. I think they let me have...
Presumably some of those men are now wanking over the obituary.
Exactly.
Just, there's one last chance, get down the... She hasn't been buried yet.
I think they let me have a word that they'd cut out somewhere else. I'd put sensual or voluptuous or something to suggest that she played the character with a bit of sexuality, and they'd cut that out as well.
Right.
And they said, well, we'll put that back in so long as we can keep the teenage stirrings as sort of as asexual as possible.
She was amazing.
She was great.
She was amazing. Her and this Carry On Screaming woman whose name...
Fenella Fielding.
Also recently died. Those two very sexy...
Yeah.
Non-traditionally sexy women, but very sexy older women, really.
Oh, yeah. Fenella Fielding was amazing.
And she was about 40 or 50 when she did Carry On Screaming.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. And yeah. No wonder I'm such a pervert. Being brought up on this stuff.
It's a good job you're here. Who knows what would have happened? Would have just been one of those conversations that one thing led to another.
I'm just going to knock one out. Come on. If you do it for Jeffrey Belden, you can do it for me. Come on. Now, my friend David Darlington, who's a fan of both Doctor Who and Fist of Fun.
He's a lovely fellow. Hello, Davey.
And works in the media now. Told me on Facebook that I can name any actor from original Doctor Who, which I presume means pre-Paul McGann.
Yeah.
And you can tell me what episode of Doctor Who they appear in.
Can we clarify? This isn't something I have claimed as a boast. This is something I mentioned in my one-man show as a sign that I was that I wasn't jumping on the Doctor Who bandwagon, because and also as a sign of the extent of my depravity, because sometimes people go, oh, I'm a massive Doctor Who fan, and you go, what's your favourite story? And they go, oh, the one with those robots, and you go, you're not a Doctor Who fan, you're a person with a television. So I don't go around going, oh, hello. What's a nice guy? Yeah, do you know I can name every actor that's ever been in Doctor? Do you know? So, but yes.
Well, I'm going to give you some if I can read my own terrible writing. So forgive me if I get their names wrong. Terence DeMarnie.
He played the church warden in episode one of The Smugglers. He's only in episode one. And he actually met his end by falling in front of a tube train a few short years later. Bless him, Terence DeMarnie. He was the actor of the brother Derek DeMarnie. Yes.
Okay. I mean, this is probably easy.
We can't guarantee this is going to be entertaining.
I thought that is correct.
But it will be accurate.
I just wrote down The Smugglers. I didn't know you could do all the names as well. Huell Bennett, who played...
Huell Bennett was a fish creature, an Iridian called Rhynie, in episode one of... You're choosing people only in one episode. Episode two of The Chase, yes.
Oh, I've got Death of Time.
Yeah, episode two of The Chase is called The Death of Time.
hold on. I can do this as well. I can do it.
In the William Hartnell era, up until episode one of The Savages, each episode had an individual title.
Okay.
Which has caused all sorts of controversy when it comes to naming the stories, as you can imagine. The arguments we have.
We'll do a few more. Esther Freud? I don't know if she's...
Oh, yeah, she's David Morris's wife, and she is of the Freud clan. She was in Attack of the... She was, again, only in one episode of Attack of the Cybermen.
These are all one episode, because I thought that'd be...
An episode... Americans call whole stories episodes, and that makes me hate them. what's your favourite episode? The Seeds of Doom. That's six episodes. That's a story. An episode, it doesn't matter.
Kenneth Kendall.
Does. Kenneth Kendall played himself.
He did.
He was He was Kenneth Kendall, the newsreader in the War Machines. Episode four.
Correct. Kenneth Kendall has sadly died. Well done for getting that back reference. The few people who got that. I just like the name of this guy, I wanted to get down to this far because at the time I bet this wasn't a problem, but now he has. Well, if he's still with us, Vic. Tablian.
He was in episode one of Pyramids of Mars. I think he's one of the guys from... I think he's in Mind Your Language. Basically, if you needed somebody from somewhere a bit foreign, it didn't quite matter where, so long as he hadn't shaved and possibly had a shop. Vic Tablian was your man.
I mean, you can't call him Tablian now. It looks like that's a terrible comedy character. Vic Taliban.
He is still around because a friend of mine, some friends of mine, run these sort of signing dues.
Yes,
and they were trying to get Vic Taliban, and I think he perhaps thought perhaps I shouldn't say this, but it was more difficult to get him than they'd anticipated that it might be.
Okay.
Because after all, he's Vic Taliban.
Just because I love this guy, Matthew Corbett, who was Sooty's...
Yeah, he's in episode five of The Demons, and it was quite a late booking because they realised there were a couple of lines that needed saying, and Katie Manning, I think, recommended him for the part because she knew him.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's given up Sooty, hasn't he? He's retired.
He has. I don't know the details. I don't know. He was... Somebody gave him his number to do the podcast, and he was one that fell out by the wayside because of various... I don't know the details of whether...
So he's about 70 now, which makes me really... Because I remember when he took over from...
he's the new guy.
Harry Corbett. Because there was Harry H. Corbett and Harry Corbett, is that right?
That's right.
His dad was Harry Corbett, who was really old.
Yeah.
And now Matthew Corbett's really old. How does that work? But I'm still the same age.
I discovered that these four words will chill your heart.
Yeah.
I found out the other day, it might be more than four words. One of the Bangles is 62.
Mm. Still would. So I'd make a walk like an Egyptian. I hope I've got the right band. I've got one last one for you. See if you get this. This is a hard one. Richard Herring. What episode of Doctor Who was Richard Herring?
Well, you were in the Colin Baker podcast. your good friend, Colin Baker.
Yeah, my very good friend. Unfortunately, I fell out with Colin Baker. I played a space plumber who had my head crushed by a Cyberman. Yep. It was in audio. That's quite a hard thing to act. I really thought about it and what I decided to go with. Because then my head, you know, because it's going to hurt and then your head crunches. So I went to someone like, ah!
So I did. Oh, it's very good.
Yeah, thank you. Stuart got turned into a Cyberman. Not fair. A Cyberman came to the recording as well. We had an actual. So he was really friendly. I don't know why Doctor Who's happened to go at him. Yeah, I upset Colin Baker. I can't quite remember what I wrote, but I wrote a Metro article where I think I described him as the second worst Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's not going to go down well, is it?
Because it's the Doctor, not Doctor Who, right? That's the second worst Doctor.
Well, now, let's not get into that.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
But you turned all that. We'll leave Doctor Who behind in about 30 minutes when this interview ends.
Feel like Al Pacino with fucking Doctor Who. Do you know what? You do one show about Doctor Who every time.
Well, let's quickly talk about you because you did an amazing show, which then went on to be a radio series as well, didn't it? Which
yeah.
Which I saw you do the second time you did it in Edinburgh. We were both at the Underbelly, and I think the first year you were there, we were on at the same time, so I didn't see your show and you didn't see my show. But we'd always meet up in the courtyard afterwards, and it was very nice. There was this little sort of high-walled courtyard at the back of the Underbelly, wasn't there? We just sat and drank wine.
Just drank red wine.
That's pretty much all I did there.
Meaning to go and see other shows later, and it just... And then we didn't.
But then the next year I was able to see your show, which is called Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf.
Yeah.
Which... It was a moving tale about.
Yeah, it hadn't meant to be. I think that's why it did okay because it got. I mean, sad endings weren't during. They happen all the time now. Everyone's dad dies at the end of a show. My dad didn't die. I killed him in a later show. I kept him in the bank. But I did a show about. It was supposed to be a sort of party political broadcast for Doctor Who. Nobody talked about Doctor Who on stage. But I had my friend Mark who directed the show. When we did a preview to a baffled group of... I went back to Ludlow, where I'm from, and did a preview to lots of people who knew my mum. I went, I used to teach him at school. He was a nice boy. And I was effing and blinding about Doctor Who. And I had this great idea of doing it in four episodes, but the episodes weren't chronological and they went backward and forward. And it was a brilliant idea, unless you want anybody to give a shit or laugh. Mark just went, take out all the jokes that are about Doctor Who that don't actually reflect on your life.
Right.
And so it came to about my dad leaving and Doctor Who filling a gap and then me having kids and me sort of bonding with my son over Doctor Who. And that hadn't been the intention to give it, but that was the bit that people liked the most, so I stuck it at the end. And as a result of that, what I think a lot of people thought was going to be a geeky show was actually something that even if they didn't know anything about Doctor Who, they thought was they enjoyed.
It was a show. Then it went on to be on the radio, and then you had some of the Doctor Who...
I had Colin Baker was in it, actually. Yeah, he was spitting feathers. He was really angry with somebody. I can't remember. He said, "I fucking hate comedians." Colin Baker was in it. It went on the radio and it went to the West End, and I'd been a jobbing comic for 10 years and resisted talking about Doctor Who because I thought, well, nobody's interested in me talking about Doctor Who. And then suddenly people wanted to employ me. So, fine. And I went around the world. My mum used to say, you'll never get anywhere if you sit on your ass watching Doctor Who all day. And my show toured the world. And I sent her a postcard from every single bit. Dear mum, you know you said I'd never get anywhere if I sat on my ass watching Doctor Who all day? I'm in Toronto.
Any plans to do it? I suppose it's been recorded. We can listen to it, can we?
There's a CD of that one. And I actually did it at the Garrick Theatre on Doctor Who's 50th anniversary. And we recorded it for DVD. And my friend is editing it. Still.
That's quite a long time ago.
It is, yeah. Fortunately, it wasn't. It's not a very current affairs show.
Unfortunately, in that five years, DVDs have failed to be a marketable format. Yeah. But like, you can put it out.
Stick it on YouTube.
Download it. Let's talk about your stand-up, and particularly you started up the Malarkey Club, is that right?
Thing that I've done by accident that's still happening. It's a comedy club called Excess Malarkey that runs every Tuesday.
Do we know the Excess Malarkey people?
I hope so. 21 years. Yeah. 21 years last week. And my brother-in-law played in a band in a pub on a Sunday night. And the manager said, I want to do comedy. And he went, my brother-in-law's a comedian. I'd been doing it for about 18 months on and off. And I went to see him. And he said, well, we'll do it for the 8 weeks between now and Christmas, see how it goes. I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I'd got comedians' numbers. Who I'd met at gigs, and I rang them, and it started off as free, then it went up to 50p. I put a one night in the first year. We had Peter Kay, Kevin Gildee, and Dom Carroll on for £1, and then loads of people came because Peter Kay was already quite famous, who'd never come to the gig before, and obviously had no intention of coming to the gig again. So I started a membership thing. But these were all I just wanted people to come back next week. And 21 years later, they still are.
Yeah.
So it's quite a career trajectory to have been in the same place every Tuesday for 21 years. Yeah. There are people who weren't born when my career was at the place it's still at now.
Yeah.
You know, people have voted for the first time. They've lost their virginity. They've moved from a city. They've lost their parents. And I've still been there every Tuesday. My own son was born on a Tuesday night. When I was on stage, that I got a phone call going, the phone went at the door, and I went, that sounds like my phone, I hope that's not my partner having a baby, it's your partner having a baby. So two of the audience took me to the hospital, and he came to the gig last week because he's old enough to now.
Yeah.
So, and I'm still there.
Well, I first went to the Edinburgh Fringe in 1987, so now nearly everyone who performs at the Edinburgh Fringe wasn't born at the time. That when I go back up, I think, oh, my God. When occasionally I go back up, I've only been once in the last 4 years, and it's over. It's over.
Every time I try to get out,
they keep bringing me back in. And you won the first Les Dawson Award?
Well, here's the thing.
Tell me about this.
The Les Dawson, they did a thing for about 3 years. They did the Northwest Comedy Awards. They got a bit of sponsorship. And it was to try and I think because loads of comics started in Manchester who the television companies didn't get their hands on, like Peter Kay and when I started it was Dave Gorman and Chris Addison and Johnny Vegas and all sorts of people sort of learnt their craft, earned their wings on the circuit here. So I think they thought, well, it's a good thing to get attention to the noise. And so it was the early days of the internet, and they did a poll and they said they asked for nominations for services to Northwest Comedy, and because the internet was relatively new, comedy forums became a new thing, and there was a Manchester comedy forum, and Excess was very popular with burgeoning comedians because it gave comedians an early break, and comics liked it, and comics got in for free, and it was the place that all the comics would go to watch comedy and then get drunk afterwards. So loads of people nominated me. So the shortlist was Peter Kay, Victoria Wood, Steve Coogan, Johnny Vegas, Dave Spike, all Ken Dodd, all really famous, Carolina Hearn. And they were all still alive then. I didn't kill them in order to get. Yeah. And then me. And then they foolishly put it open to a public vote. But of course, the internet was in its infancy and only really sort of very internet-y forum-y people. So of course, I got loads of votes because it was all. And they'd occasionally do a press release going, The surprise leader is currently little-known comedian Toby Haydock, but there's only 2 weeks left to vote for your favourite. Could it be Ken Dodd, Carolina Hearn, Peter Kay? And of course, no, and it was all the local papers doing that. And of course, no. And so I won, and it was never open to the public vote ever again.
Still counts.
It still, yes, well, it still did counts. Win it, but I just wasn't intended to.
Right, let's ask you an emergency question from Emergency Questions, 1001 Emergency Questions. Available in the foyer after the show. Also, if you're at home, you know, you can buy it on gofaststrike.com or Amazon. I'm obsessed. You've had books out, right?
Yes, about Doctor.
Yeah. Maybe we won't talk about those. No, there's a book. You'd watched all of Doctor Who, didn't you?
So I've watched all of Doctor Who in chronological order, yeah. 2 episodes a day, 3 episodes at weekends.
Yeah.
2 on my wedding. That's the one that ended in divorce. Still don't know why.
But were you obsessed? Were you obsessed with checking your Amazon ranking every 2 hours?
No.
Oh, you got it. Just me then. So,
the internet isn't a place to find happiness, Richard.
I got up to 262 in books. I got to the. I've been trying to beat. There's a chart called Books, Reference, Trivia, Fun Facts, and Trivia, and I was about 8 in that chart, and I was 4 places behind a man called Hugh Jasburn, who'd written a book called 52 Things to Do on the Toilet. Something like that. What? It was actually looks like quite a good book about learning stuff on the loo. And I was obsessed with overtaking him, and it took me a long time, but I did it.
I had to do a thing on Amazon. Recently, I went to check if my CD was still in print and still on Amazon, because you could still get copies. And I noticed its star rating had gone down to 3 from 5. It was only about 7 votes. And so, you know, one poor score can really knock it down. And somebody had given it 1 star. And they said, I'm sure the show's good, I haven't heard it, but the format that it is on and the compressed audio is not conducive to a happy listening experience, so I wouldn't buy it anyway. So you go, hang on, so you're reviewing, it's like you giving this a bad review because you don't like the fucking carpet. You know, I am hung by that, sadly.
Yeah, that's it. So you can't get too obsessed with things like this. Calm down.
Yeah, I know where he lives.
I've seen people complaining that the package didn't arrive on time, or you know, didn't arrive, so therefore 3 stars.
Yes.
Seems a bit unfair.
Yes. Would have been good if it had arrived on Monday.
2 stars. Okay. This is a good question for you, because I know this is quite within your bailiwick, but it's science fiction-ish. Have you planned out what you would do in the event of a zombie apocalypse?
Well, I mean, frequently. I mean,
what
you know, the thing
you
is,
employ?
Well, you know, it's the big dilemma, isn't it? Do you? Because I was quite a big fan of Survivors, and I do quite often when I'm walking in the countryside, I imagine, would this be a place to hole out? You know, what are the possibilities of entry? Because do you trust that, you know, we would maintain civilization, or would it be every person for themselves? So would you sort of be part of a community, or would you find somewhere out in the middle of nowhere? But you'd have to put mines down, because you can't be awake all the time if you're on your own. And obviously I'd stockpile tins and things like that, but I'd have to be largely self-sufficient, so I'd need a bit of land, because if you have land, you draw attention to yourself, because the land would be maintained and verdant and all of those sorts of things. So I'd need a stockpile of weapons as well. But they'd have to be ones that I'd be able to practice using without making a noise, because obviously then they'd so actually having a machine gun's no good, because people could hear you from all around. They'd know you're tooled up, and they'd send their people. So you'd have to be good at a bow. Yeah, I've thought about it quite a lot.
Yes, it was fun. Do you remember? I'm sure you remember Day of the Triffids, the book, but also the wonderful 1980s version.
Yeah, with John Dutton and Emma Ralph. Yeah.
What would you prefer, to live in a nice family with people you liked, or in one of those places where they kind of had sex slaves and harems?
Well, no, yeah, because they kidnapped them, don't they? Kidnapped a sighted person and handcuffed them to loads of blind people in order that they do their bit. I like it. Yeah, it's sort of it's a sort of lesson for today's politics. It's imposing niceness. You know, say you will be nice. You'll be so nice. We'll have to handcuff you to people in order to make you do it.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd go and hide and live on my own somewhere.
Yeah. They all died of dysentery. It was sad. Spoilers.
I did get into trouble for that. Talking of spoilers, I wrote the obituary for Gareth Thomas, who played Blake in Blake 7. And as part of his obituary, I described what happened in the last episode of Blake 7. And somebody seriously went on my Facebook page and said, well, that's ruined Blake 7 for me. I haven't watched it yet. And you spoilt the ending. It was all in 1981. How round is the embargo?
Just saving up the last episode for a special occasion.
Yeah. Gareth Thomas, who died today. Look away now!
Who died in reality, like he did. End of, okay. What this might have something for this, as being a comedian, and you've toured a lot, haven't you?
Great, so.
What's the scariest thing that's ever happened to you in a B&B? Did you stay in B&Bs, or did you stay in? You might be of a generation that was beyond.
No, we didn't. It's mostly. I mean, one of the reasons I've sort of withdrawn from being on the road as much is because I've probably been in every travel lodge imaginable. I knew my life had taken a turn when the lady at a particular travel lodge knew my name and what I drank. And there's a thing of going into a travel lodge at midnight and a glass of lukewarm medium white wine is there ready, waiting for you with your name on it,
and it's Alan Partridge.
I've been here too fucking often. Yeah. But although it did mean that I was bold when she once sent me up to my usual room. Ran out of, and there was a wine glass there that had a condom in it, and obviously I sort of went down and said, could I perhaps have a room that hasn't got a wine glass with a condom in it? Because that opens up all sorts of questions that I didn't want to. And a friend of mine said, was it used? I didn't look that fucking closely. It was enough. Wine glass and condom was enough to make me back out of the situation.
I stayed in a hotel in Florida, where there was a used condom on the bed as I checked into the room. That's quite bad, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And there was,
yeah.
I was staying in Travelodge where there was a bogey on the shower curtain. I talked to Chris Addison the other week, just socially. Sometimes I see comedians and don't record it. It's a waste, though. What a waste.
The lost episodes.
He said he went to the same, on the way back from gigs, he went to the same service station and had a kind of late or very late breakfast or very early breakfast. And they knew him and would give him his usual. And at that point, he thought, this is.
Yeah, it's too.
When the service station knows your regular order.
Yeah.
Because, like, service station, I've worked in service stations. And you don't last long as a staff member in a service. It's a very hard job. It's a very hard job to stay in. And, you know, you have to be forced to stay in, I think. So, yeah, poor old Chris Addison. Good. Do you remember the TV show Murphy's Mob?
I do.
Can you recount everything that you remember about it?
Yeah. The theme tune was sang by Gary Holton, who played Wayne in Auf Wiedersehen, Pet.
Yes.
One of the stars was the actor Keith Jayne, who also played Stig of the Dump in the children's movie Stig of the Dump. He was also in the Doctor Who story, The Awakening, both episodes of it. And their manager was played by a marvellous character actor called Milton Johns, who specialised in sort of Uriah Heep character.
What episodes of Doctor Who was he in?
He was in Enemy of the World, all six episodes.
Yeah.
He's in... all six episodes of The Invasion of Time and all four episodes of The Android Invasion. Although those listening, I do know The Android Invasion comes before The Invasion of Time. I just didn't do it in chronological order because I'm a maverick. So those are the three that he's in. And I interviewed him at the Garrick Theatre for my podcast, and he turned up in a three-piece suit with a pocket square, it was audio. And I love him for that.
Is he still going?
He's still going, and he's got marvellous anecdotes.
Do you remember Wurzel from Murphy's Mob? Come on, Wurzel was the funny character. Or
wasn't that Keith?
Oh, maybe it was.
Was that Keith Jayne?
No, I think Wurzel was played by Lewis Stevens, whose real name is Stephen Lewis, but he had to change.
But he had to change because of Blakey from On the Buses. Yeah.
And weirdly, I saw the Wurzel one on a bus in America. He did Camp America at the same time as me. And I shouted, "Hey, Wurzel!" and then hid. He must have been annoyed because he was in New York at the time. He must have been annoyed.
I've escaped it.
Nice guy.
Was that? I thought I knew quite a lot about Murphy's Mob there. Seeing as I never actually saw a whole episode, I don't think. But
everywhere you go, everything you see. I think actually they wouldn't let me. I said, can you sing the theme tune? And they wouldn't let me put it in the book because I quoted too much of it.
Oh really?
Because
they'd have to pay a royalty.
They would have to find whoever wrote it. It might be Gary Holton, I think, who's no longer with us.
No, yeah. And pay his estate a shilling.
It's spoiled by the internet because me and my friend Phil Fry, all I remember is the theme tune. It would go everywhere you go, everything you see. Someone say, you know, it's a tragedy. People find another place because you can't play here. And then there was a line that me and Phil Fry, my friend at school, couldn't decipher. that we decided was spreading all your nits about. But it wasn't. But, you know, in those days, you could have a proper years-long conversation about a thing like this.
Well, that's the problem with the internet. I was quite used... Before the Internet Movie Database, people used to ask me the questions. They now look up on the Internet Movie Database, so I have far fewer conversations or love.
If you want to know what the lyrics were, if you don't want to know, turn off now. Go out the room. The actual lyric was, "Don't want any lip, so there."
Oh, I think your version was better.
Spreading all your nits about. I don't know how we're going to... Very, very indistinct singing from Gary Holton, probably because of all the heroin he was taking. So it was a shame. It was very sad that he died. So we'll leave that for the moment. It's slightly back to Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But I very much enjoyed your appearance on Dave Gorman's show, Modern Life is Goodish.
Yes.
Which I think I've talked to Dave about this on the podcast because it is one of his obsessions, and the guy he's obsessed with is quite cross with him. But
yes,
you had to watch this guy's video about...
It was extraordinary. Because Dave sent me a thing saying, is this a clip from Doctor Who? I think the title sequence had some sort of picture of a castle or something. He said, is this from an actual episode of Doctor Who? And I went, it's very... No, definitely not. And then he sort of got in touch. He said, look, I want to do this thing, but I've already had a go at this guy. And Dave is such a sweet-natured and nice man. He said, I don't want it to look like I'm being vindictive. Whereas if I keep going, this is a load of Tommy rot, it will look like it. So can you say that? And he basically said, look, there's this interview, there's this DVD that purports to be Doctor Who, The Lost Interviews. And it's largely the interviews are lost in the same way that you throw away the wrapping paper of a sweet that you're about to eat, because you don't need that bit. Because it would be sort of like, it would be the offcuts from the beginning of the end, and the end of an interview, or a bit of an interview with somebody that's been in Doctor Who, where they don't talk about being in Doctor Who. Or in some cases, as is the case with Lee Mead from Holby City and Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat, an interview with somebody that's never been in Doctor Who. And so he got me on to sort of show, to sort of, he'd say, so here's a bit where he introduces Felicity Kendall, who played Agatha Christie in Doctor Who, and I had to go, Felicity Kendall didn't play Agatha Christie in Doctor Who. It's just a litany of bollocks, but I think something like $19.99 for a 42-minute DVD of just offcuts and shit. So I got to sit in Dave's audience and just go bollocks. No. And that was fun, yeah.
It was fun, you know. So your mum was wrong again. That's another job you got from Doctor Who.
Exactly.
That's all worked out brilliant. What do you think about all this women being Doctor Who now? What do you think about that? They've made it all women, haven't they?
It's all women are Doctor Who now.
They've made all the past ones women as well. They can do that. They can travel back in time.
All the women are Doctor Who now, and it's just they put women on television now. They put brown people on. I mean, Vic Tablian's livid because it used to just be him. And now it's all of them.
Have they shown you a new episode? Because you like Doctor Who so much, they've sent it to you.
No, I think my days might be over because there's lots of young woke lady Doctor Who fans now. I used to be the sort of Doctor Who, the person they'd wheel out, you know, and go, well, this is marvellous. But now they get people who are attractive and know
they're
how to talk
to get
people.
A woman to be you.
Yeah, well, indeed. I have regenerated into a 22-year-old lesbian. So I haven't seen it, and I quite like it that way. In fact, I've had the opportunity to see it, and I would rather watch it with it because I know so much about that. I'm so inured in all of the old stuff. The episodes haven't been made yet are the only things I don't know anything about. But it amuses me. It's a sort of shortcut. I remember when The Bodyguard was on recently, there was a few critics go, God, there were three police people who were women and the bomb disposal expert was Chinese. I mean, it's political correctness gone mad. And you go, excellent. I wasn't sure if you're a cunt and now I know. And there probably aren't millions of Chinese bomb disposal experts. I don't really know.
I don't give a fuck, indeed.
It's just an extraordinary thing to get cross about. Now, with the Doctor Who thing, I do come for it from a slightly different angle, is that Doctor Who being away, it's very interesting that quite a few people, when it was announced, go, well, it would have been a disgrace if it had been another white man. And you wouldn't know, it wouldn't have been a disgrace because that's what the character's always been. And you sort of go, and so what is it, which lines in the series do you think lend itself to the fact that the Doctor could change into a woman? And they go, well, no, I don't watch it. You go, oh, right. So you're so pleased that this programme you don't watch has done a thing that you think it should do based on no knowledge whatsoever of the programme. As it happens, I've watched every episode of Doctor Who millions of times, and I'm fine with it. And it's difficult when you say that because people go, oh, I'm glad we've got your permission. No, I'm not saying that either. Fuck off, Twitter. This is why people are going to stop talking in the end and just go like this. And she's a cracking actor as well, and I'm looking forward to it. But it does amuse me also how people you see sort of people you hitherto didn't know go, yes, this is what I've been waiting for all my life, and you go, but you didn't watch Doctor Who until about 3 months ago. I know a lot of Doctor Who fans, and there's a certain spectrum which we all inhabit to a certain end of it. Yeah. Probably most of the, we all swim in a similar end of the gene pool, put it like this. Yeah. And if you're a 50-year-old man that's got a certain image of what Doctor Who is like, and it's been like that for your entire life, and you can't quite cope with it, it's no good. I find it a bit mean that people who are sort of a bit right on then go, oh, and you're a dinosaur who deserves to die. No, it's somebody who's a bit on the spectrum who's struggling to cope with something. Why don't you give them the same sort of understanding that Doctor Who would, actually? But that's only as a side issue because of the narrative has become, quite rightly, that, you know, it's of course it doesn't matter so long as the character of the Doctor is a benign traveller who uses intellect and fun.
The thing I think about it is that most Doctor Who fans have never even seen a woman. So
that's right. In fact,
they'll just assume it's some kind of weird alien from another planet.
I didn't know what a woman was. It had to be explained to me. When they said Jodie Whittaker is playing the new Doctor Who, I said, Jodie isn't a man's name. And they said, no, there are things that aren't men. And so Doctor Who is very educational. Because I'd never seen one.
Yeah, I don't mind there being a woman Doctor Who. What I do mind is Bradley Walsh being in Doctor Who. That has ruined Doctor Who. He'd just be asking questions, laughing at Fanny Schmeller. Someone will say Fanny Schmeller.
He's actually a very... He played a baddie in the Sarah Jane Adventures. He was really, really good. I know you were joshing. But I'm a Doctor Who fan, so what you have to do... Because this is my life. I do a joke about Doctor Who, and somebody will come out and point out how it is factually incorrect, even though that was the joke. Most of the responses to anything I put on Twitter begin with the words, I think you'll find...
We do. We love Doctor Who fans here, and most of them are fans of this as well. Let's say, who likes Doctor Who? Cheer now! Yeah, you fucking idiots! No offence, Toby. I know you like it and all that, but fuck it. Come on! Can't wait to talk to Glenn Wool, who's actually had sex with probably at least two women. He's already taken drugs. Have you ever taken any drugs?
Yeah.
Oh, fine. Yeah. Should have gone to that. I've been talking about Doctor Who all this time. Because I love it. And we'll quickly talk about it. We're going to have to wrap up. It's gone so fast. And thank you so much for doing this, Toby. It's really fantastic.
No, it's great. I thought it'd be nice to come and chat and establish that there's more about me than Doctor Who. So yeah. It's been...
We've got 2 minutes to do that. You've got a couple of radio plays coming. I mean, I didn't realise. I knew you did lots of acting, and I've seen you in the theatre. And I knew you did a bit of writing, but I didn't know you'd becoming quite a prolific writer. You've got a couple of plays on the radio coming out.
I've had a few plays on the radio, and I've got two coming up. Depending on they'll probably be on iPlayer by the time this goes out. As we speak, the next one is on Sunday, and it's about Spike Milligan. And it stars Mark Heap as Spike Milligan.
Oh,
and it's
great.
About Spike Milligan on the gates of heaven, and Spike Milligan didn't believe in heaven. And it's to mark the centenary of Spike Milligan. I've written one, a playwright called Lee Mattinson's written one, and Jessica Hines off of Spaced and W1A and the Doctor Who story, Human Nature, Family of Blood. and she's written one, and we performed it in Hull last week, and... I was asked to do it because I said, Toby, yeah, we want. I said, is it because I'm a comedian and I could write lots of funny things about Spike Milligan? And they said, yes, but also could you do the one that's about him being sad and having mental illness? Like, thanks very much. just thank God he didn't like Doctor Who as well. So that's called I Told You I Was Ill, Going Going Goon, and that's on Radio 3. Brilliant. Mine's called Going Going Goon. And then at the end of the month, I've got a horror story called The Road, which is based on a lost play by Nigel Neal, who wrote Quatermass, and it's got Mark Gatiss and Adrian Scarborough and Ralph Ineson and Francis McGee, a fantastic cast. That's based on a lost television play that was on in 1963, and there's no copy of, and it's like a sort of lost holy grail of horror and sci-fi writing. And I'd pitched it a few years ago and got nowhere, and then I pitched it again because I was doing a pitch document that had four ideas on it, and there was a gap at the bottom, and I'm one of those people, and I didn't like it, so I just cut and pasted my original pitch because it fitted perfectly, and I changed the font so it was all matching, and I thought, oh good, that looks nice now, and I sent that in, and that was the one that they got made.
Great.
So and that's I'm really pleased. It's spooky, and that's on at the end of the month on the 27th of October.
I think the great not yet written Spike Milligan play, I might have pitched this before. Stuart Lee, when he worked for the Sunday Times, went to interview Spike Milligan just before he died. And Spike Milligan never came out of his bedroom. Stu just sat in his lounge. And Spike Milligan was having one of his episodes and wouldn't come down. And I think that would be a great play called Waiting for Spike.
Waiting for Spike, yeah.
Stuart Lee and Spike Milligan never quite meeting.
I wish I'd known that. I sweated blood over this bloody thing. I did. It was the hardest thing I've ever written. I wanted to kill everyone, including Spike, and he's dead.
Right, before you go, I'll just ask you one question. Do you think, in the past now, because obviously things have changed, that Doctor Who ever tried to suck his own cock?
Well,
is there?
I mean, now he
that?
Could give himself tips, couldn't he? He can sort of, now from this Sunday, he'll be able to. If ever they do the 13 Doctors, it's like this is how you should have been doing it.
He could when they do the mashup episodes, he could just suck himself.
It's very
off,
easy.
Just get down.
Doesn't even
then
have to bend. No. Just, but they could. Flick they could, in fact, they could do each other.
Yeah.
They could, I mean, there could be a circle
could
of
be a human centipede. Yeah, if you had to put three doctors in a human centipede, which three would you put in?
Well, I'd have to put. I haven't thought. I'd
Colin Baker definitely be at the end of mine. Now he's definitely not going to talk to me.
I'd put Peter Cushing in the middle of William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton just to throw everybody and to really annoy any fans that would go for a perv would go, but he's not canon! and it would put them off their satisfaction.
Well, I think we've learned today there is more to you than Doctor Who. I don't know quite what it is, but there must be, mustn't there? Ladies and gentlemen, Toby Haddock!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.